From KUAZ News in Tucson, I'm Julie Burock, and this is Arizona Spotlight. The general election is only a few weeks away, and Arizona voters will be asked to review a long list of propositions. One of them would allow jail time for a person convicted of personal possession or use of methamphetamine. We'll have the story. The Tucson Meet Yourself Festival is this weekend. We'll talk with the event's founder and organizer. Pam White has a report on the St. Albert the Great Forum on Science and Theology, and the music of local musician Matt Mitchell. Those stories and more coming up, but first. On November 7th, Arizona voters will be asked to review Proposition 301. It deals with meth use and would allow those convicted for the first or second time of using or possessing the drug to be sentenced to a jail or prison term instead of mandatory probation. Christopher Conover reports.
Methamphetamine is still a problem in southern Arizona, and the legislature is asking voters in November to approve taking mandatory probation and treatment away from first-time meth offenders. James Coucher with the Meth Free Alliance says the Second Chance Law was put into effect in 1996.
The idea behind the statute was not to incarcerate people who've been caught with relatively small amounts of drugs and ruin their lives, because we all know the effect that that's going to have on most people. If you throw them in jail, they have a felony conviction or even a serious misdemeanor conviction, their life is significantly changed. The idea was to give them a chance to reform their lives by requiring they be put on probation at least twice, and then only on a third conviction can they then be incarcerated.
Those who are on the ground in the drug war say the catch-and-release idea, keeping first-time offenders out of jail and in treatment, is a good one, except for meth users. James Coucher with the Meth Free Alliance says meth users can be a different case.
Because while someone may be on probation and may be monitored for their meth usage, they still have a wonderful opportunity to go out and commit a lot of ancillary crime, identity theft, property crime, violent crime, all kinds of other things that are associated with meth.
The Meth Free Alliance is not supporting the version of Proposition 301 that's on the ballot. And there are some who are outright opposing it, like Ann Nichols with a group calling itself Meth Free Arizona, No on 301.
These people are engaged probably in other activities, but they respond to treatment. And when they respond to treatment, they change their habits and their lifestyle. And when they go to prison, they simply do time, come out, and get back into the same system. There's very little evidence that people who go to prison kick drug habits. And there's a lot of evidence that people who go through treatment do.
Opponents of Proposition 301 also say it intimates that meth users are worse than other drug users.
I think we carve them out because meth has gotten so much media attention, and there is a myth that meth users can't be treated. We know that's not true.
Changes to the sentencing of meth offenders is something the Meth Alliance talked with state lawmakers about during the legislative session earlier this year. And the proposal, now known as Prop 301, was put on the ballot by state lawmakers. But James Coucher with the Meth Free Alliance says it's not what they were looking for.
What our task force looked for was a way of changing the law to give the courts the option that in the appropriate circumstances that people who were convicted of meth possession could then be incarcerated rather than put on probation. It was never the intent of our task force to mandate jail.
Even though the new proposal would allow a judge to sentence a first-time user to probation and treatment, opponents like Ann Nichols say it still shortchanges the person who is convicted.
What it would disqualify them for is treatment under the old Prop 200, which has specialized funding. And if you say that you're not going to be able to have the probation with mandatory treatment under Prop 200, then the availability of treatment becomes much, much more limited and much less likely to happen. If you don't have a good attorney, it's not likely that the judge is going to say you should get treatment if it's not something that's already in the system.
The hands of the legislature were somewhat tied when it came to sentencing meth users because the mandatory probation law was originally approved by voters in 1996. So really, Arizona residents are the only ones who can change it. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Christopher Conover.
Up next, an interview with the organizers of the Tucson Meet Yourself Festival being held this weekend. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. Every year since 1974, people from all over southern Arizona have gathered to celebrate the diverse traditional arts of the Tucson community at the Tucson Meet Yourself Festival. The festival is being held this weekend in downtown El Presidio Park between the Old County Courthouse and City Hall. Joining me now to talk about the event is founder Big Jim Griffith and Mia Hansen, who is one of the organizers. Big Jim and Mia, thanks for being here.
Well, we're happy to be here.
Tell me a little bit about the history of the festival. Why was it created?
It was created in 1974 when a couple of friends, including my wife and I, decided that there just was a tremendous amount of beauty being created in Tucson within small communities, and that this beauty didn't really have a way to seep out to the larger community of Tucson. All sorts of neat stuff going on in African-American churches. Tohono'odham polka, we called them Papago Indians then. Lots of different kinds of food, but no place to sample it, no place to go and see it. So we thought it would be neat to get all the traditional folk and ethnic musicians, dancers, craftspeople, and cooks we could together in one place and let it all happen. And we started in October of 1974. We've been going under one name or another ever since. And that's all we do. We are still just dedicated to presenting the living traditional arts of Southern Arizona's folk and ethnic communities as accurately and respectfully as possible. And if that sounds dry and stuffy and like not much fun, all I can say is that you haven't been to Tucson Meet Yourself.
Well, it is said to be a lot of fun, but it really is a celebration of all the different ethnicities and cultures within the Tucson community.
Right.
And tell me about some of the performances that will be.
We are going to have a wonderful program this year. As we've had in many years in the past, we have some wonderful traditional standard acts that have been there to do some Meet Yourself for years and years, including the Seven Pipers Scottish Society, who will be the highlight on Saturday night about 7:30. They'll march through the festival with their bagpipes and drums and rouse up the crowd, and following them will be a newcoming group to Tucson Meet Yourself this year, the Al Hanin Arabic Debka Dancers, actually a University of Arizona group that is doing dances from the Levant region, Palestine, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. They're really energetic and exciting.
Great.
That's going to be great fun. But we've got all sorts of wonderful folk music and dance, from Chinese dancers and dragon dancers to the India Society of Southern Arizona. The Club España dancers have been dancing the Sevillanas for years and years. We're going to have Western music, Scandinavian folk dancing. Another newcomer this year, a Puerto Rican contemporary folk music duo, will be coming up on Sunday afternoon. So it's just an incredible conglomeration of all sorts of ethnic music and dance for the programming.
And where do you find the different groups that come in? Are they from outside Tucson, or are they all here from our community?
No, all in Tucson. Somebody once asked me, who are you bringing in for the festival this year? And I had to say, you know, we don't bring people in, we bring people out. Mm-hmm. We just spend the year poking around Tucson and seeing who we find. And some of the groups, the Seven Pipers, the Desert Indian Dancers, who traditionally end the festival with a Tohono'odham circle dance late Sunday afternoon with everybody who wants to joining in. They've been there since the very first year. Some of the groups, as Mia said, are new this year.
And the folk art is said to be spectacular. Can you tell me a little bit about that aspect of the festival?
Oh, yes. Saturday and Sunday between 1 and 5 o'clock in the Old County Courthouse Courtyard, We'll have folk art demonstrations for everything from African-American quilting to fly tying and hair weaving. Jim, I think you need to get your hair woven this year.
And, I need to get some hair.
Yaki, paper flower making, Toʻono Odham basketry, a newcomer this year, Turkish ceramic painting, all sorts of different folk arts that people have learned from their families, from their traditions that have been handed down over the years. So what you do is you can walk around in the courtyard and talk to these folks and see how they paint Ukrainian Easter eggs or how they make hats. Or how they paint Indian hand painting. There's going to be some of that, too.
And also get into a little bit of the why. Two new sort of large things in the festival. One is that we've blocked off Church Street. We usually have lowriders on Church Street, and we hope we will this year. But we also have a bigger program called Meet the Street, with all sorts of street things going on, including kids doing street games, you know, hopscotch and jacks and or sidewalk games, rather.
How has the festival evolved over the past 32 years?
Well, it's gotten bigger. I mean, the simple question is, the answer is that it's gotten bigger. There are maybe, we expect between 40 and 45,000 people to show up. The festival's bigger because is able to be bigger because the staff is bigger. We've got an absolutely wonderful volunteer staff, and us old folks, like me, don't really have to work very hard. We just sit around and get fat and take the credit. And people like Mia have absorbed what we're trying to do and are doing an incredible job of it. And it's so exciting to see your baby grown up and doing well. So, yeah.
Well, Big Jim, yeah, thank you very much for being here. When we continue with Arizona Spotlight, Pam White reports on a fall lecture series being held at the University of Arizona on science and religion. You're listening to Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. The UA Newman Catholic Center is in the midst of a fall lecture series on science and religion. Vatican Observatory astronomers and UA faculty members are featured speakers for the series called the St. Albert the Great Forum on Science and Theology. Forum organizer and Vatican astronomer William Steger will speak on Wednesday. His topic is the Big Bang and theological creation. Pam White reports.
I've always seen science and theology, science and faith, as enriching one another, not as being in essential conflict at all.
William Steger is an astronomer with the Vatican Observatory Research Group, which operates the Vatican Telescope at Mount Graham. He's also a Jesuit priest.
Theological belief, religious belief, if it's really life-giving, it helps us to appreciate the meaning in nature, or it helps us to maybe see a little bit more deeply where it may have all come from and where it might all be going.
And this year, he's the organizer of the St. Albert the Great Forum on Science and Theology. He and other Vatican astronomers, as well as U of A faculty members, are featured speakers. Dr. Steger says the forum is based on key insights developed by Albert, who was both a learned theologian and a brilliant natural scientist in the 13th century.
That the truth is one, that the truth is one no matter how you come to it, and that the different means of coming to the truth, whether it's science or whether it's philosophy or whether it's the humanities or whether it's theology, that the different means of coming to that truth cannot contradict one another if they're properly interpreted.
Dr. Steger's topic for the series explores whether or not the Big Bang and theological creation are exclusive alternatives in explaining the universe. He says they're not.
Start with almost completely homogeneous or smooth ball of gas expanding out of the Big Bang and cooling, and then it gradually clumps, and galaxies and stars within those galaxies form out of that expanding ball of gas. And then once you get the stars, of course, you end up producing most of the elements, most of the chemical elements, which then provide building blocks for complexity and for chemistry and for life. And science is very good at telling you all the details of how that works. But what science is not at all good at is explaining how you ended up with something rather than nothing, and how you ended up with some order rather than no order at all.
If a conflict does exist between science and religion, Dr. Steger says it's usually because of a lack of understanding.
That the conflicts that are there and that can be very seemingly very deep are really the result of misunderstanding or misinterpreting either the science or the theology, either the science or the belief.
The forum was started 15 years ago by a graduate student in astronomy, along with a young U of A chaplain who thought it was important to discuss these ideas.
Because there were so many students who came to the University of Arizona and were in different classes, who were becoming confused about whether or not what they were learning was contradicting their faith in any essential way. And running into some professors who were sort of seeming to indicate, without actually saying it perhaps, that you couldn't be a good Christian or a good believer and believe in evolution.
Dr. Steger says the intent of the forum is still the same, to be thought-provoking, to broaden people's perspectives, and be a source of enlightenment.
To help people understand that there is a long and very deep and very very sophisticated tradition within Christianity and within Islam and Judaism, all three as a matter of fact, which really proclaim that that anything you find out using reason, using the sciences, cannot essentially contradict faith if it's properly understood and interpreted.
For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Pam White.
Stay tuned to Arizona Spotlight. Up next, the music of local musician Matt Mitchell. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. There's a jam session in Tucson every Monday at the French Quarter, where any musician is invited to bring his instrument and play with some of Tucson's finest. One of them is Matt Mitchell, the jam's organizer. He's well known among Tucson musicians for his fearless approach to performing a variety of music styles. We got Matt to take a break and talk with KUAZ's Mark McLemore.
I understand that you've been doing a jam session recently.
Oh, yeah, at the French Quarter on Mondays. Yeah, and I've been doing that for about a year and a half. And the first hour is usually a concert with, you know, whatever band I hire, and then the jam session is the remaining 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
It's usually 8 to 11. And that's been a lot of fun because I've been able to just hire a lot of Tucson's best musicians and play with them. And the venue's also great because you can kind of play any style you want at any volume that's reasonable, you know.
Uh-huh.
Unlike the restaurant scene, where you kind of tend to play standards and play at a background music volume. So
it's truly a jam session. It's not just strictly in the jazz idiom.
It is in the jazz idiom.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Like a jazz jam session.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you get people of all different levels of talent coming
to
the stage?
Yeah, sure do. And that's great because, you know, everybody from beginners need a place to play to professionals need a place to sort of try out different ideas and stuff. So. And we've had some really neat players. One is Bryce Winston, who is a sax player who I think was born in Tucson, moved to New Orleans, joined Terrence Blanchard's band,
mm-hmm.
and came back to Tucson because of Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably the best jazz musician in Tucson right now. He's a tenor sax player and other reeds and stuff, but just a deep, deep player, and he comes to our jam every once in a while and really honors us.
Well, let's talk about how you got started in music. How long have you been playing guitar, and what brought you to the guitar in the first place?
I've been playing about maybe 21 years. I played classical piano when I was like from 8 to 12 and quit that just because of the discipline of it. I sort of rejected the, you have to go practice. And so, and then as I became, you know, a teenager, I got into rock and and wanted to play guitar for that reason. So as a teenager, you know, I played like Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and AC/DC, and it was kind of a retro 60s vibe among my friends in the 80s.
Yeah, right. That was going on a lot. You needed to rebel from the classical training that you'd had.
I guess, yeah, it's all part of that whole thing. Yeah. And it was just the sounds I was really into, too. You know, just those rock sounds is just what I liked then.
And now that's led you to a situation in Tucson where you are doing a bunch of different things in different venues. And you feel comfortable doing that, just switching hats? And
yeah, I mean, that's what makes it kind of more palatable to do, because if you just play one style, it can get kind of boring.
Yeah.
You know, so actually right now I'm not doing a lot of non-jazz stuff, but in the past I've done a lot of non-jazz stuff, and that makes a much more well-rounded
Well,
career.
I know that there was a klezmer metal band for a while.
That was a lot of fun. El Creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did klezmer and Eastern European folk music and Middle Eastern folk music done like heavy metal style. That was a lot of fun.
Let's try to give, if you can, our listeners a definition of what klezmer music is.
I mean, I play it and I know what it is instinctively. You know, Jewish music that accompanied weddings and special events, you know. And, of course, Jews are all over the world, so, you know, Ethiopia, Russia, etc. But we mostly play Eastern European Jewish music and some Russian stuff and some jazz and stuff.
And another thing that you've been doing recently is playing music that's often described as either hot club music or Django Reinhardt style, acoustic jazz generally. This is usually involving, what, a couple of guitars, a stand-up bass, and a violin.
Yes, or a clarinet sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Django's later groups had clarinet. And that's been a lot of fun. Partly it's been as a result of the just increase in awareness of that music across the country.
Well, maybe you'll give us an example of that. Now, when I hear Django-style acoustic jazz, the first thing that jumps out at me is the rhythm guitar kind of chugging along.
Yes.
And that gives it sort of this kind of drive where you don't need a drummer necessarily.
Exactly. The rhythm guitar player is kind of like a drummer. And some people criticize the music because it can be kind of the same rhythmically, but it's kind of a nice backdrop to do all the fancy stuff on top of.
Okay. Well, can you give us a little example of a Django-style rhythm guitar?
Yeah.
That was great. That was really great. And Django, as most people who are familiar with his music have probably heard, his hand was burned badly in a fire.
Right.
He was a violinist originally, who then gave up the violin and started playing guitar.
But banjo first, actually, like a six-string banjo guitar.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so he was really doing all of his courting with essentially three fingers, right?
Two fingers, and then the pinky and the ring were kind of fused in a mass that he would use only on chords. So single lines were just the two, the index and the middle.
So we've talked a little bit about the kinds of music that you've been playing lately. What are some of the venues for your music?
I've been playing at a place called the 17th Street Market. It's a really nice, quirky Tucson new venue. It's a oriental produce and fish market. And a great musician who moved to town, Harvey Brooks, started a music store in the corner of the shop. And Harvey's got a great history. He played with Dylan, Hendrix, and Miles Davis, and just got a great addition to the town. So it's just a neat little, you know, you play for people who shop, and they also have some seating there. So it's just a great venue. And I'm going to be playing there tonight at 4 o'clock.
Okay, this afternoon.
Yeah, this afternoon.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, we're going to let you play some music for our listeners. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for coming down to the studio, and we'll just let you play now.
Thanks for having me. All right, this first tune is a Gershwin tune called They Say It's Wonderful.
To hear more of Matt Mitchell's live studio performance, go to our website at kuat.org. You can also visit Matt's website at mattmitchellguitar.com. And now here's Mark McLemore once again with the Arizona Spotlight Arts Calendar.
In addition to the Tucson Meet Yourself Festival this weekend, the Big Arizona Music Festival kicks off tomorrow. It's downtown and on 4th Avenue. Tonight, Amy Goodman makes an appearance at the Rialto Theater. The play Endymion finishes a run this weekend at the Rogue Theater. And next Tuesday at 7, the Arizona Water for People Committee presents the documentary Running Dry at the Loft Theater. This is Mark McLemore for Arizona Spotlight.
Also going on next week, graduate students from the University of Arizona Mel and Enid Zuckerman College of Public Health will hold a forum for political candidates to discuss health issues in Arizona. Candidates for the state legislature in districts 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30 have been invited. It happens on Tuesday, October 17th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the UA Zuckerman College of Public Health. Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood, with production assistance from Ginger Duran. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. A portion of the music heard on today's program was written and performed by Calexico. Audio archives of Arizona Spotlight programs are available online at kuaz.org. Podcasts are also available. I'm Julie Burock.